It's a Slim Time production.
We back. Welcome to another episode of the Courtcast. As usual, it's by voice, you can tell it's me. Voice of reason, voice of truth. The man who speaks the truth, only the truth. And nothing but the truth. It's good to be back to talk about another week of playoff basketball. With me, I have the returning squad. Man, the myth, the legend. Black and white, T-Shiesty. Thank you for coming back.
That's me. Stay mystical, guys.
Mystical? From where? And then the man who happens to be Skip Bayless' role model. The man who Skip wakes up every morning and tries to emulate, Femi. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Before we start, please, did you guys see Skip telling LeBron that his chips? I don't know if you guys seen LeBron's chips advert.
Nah, but I slowed down watching Undisputed. They be talking a lot of
they be talking crazy these days, bro. They be talking crazy. But yeah, let's get into it. It's playoff basketball, second round. And what place to start better than what happened yesterday in Dallas? Series is tied, 2-2. Mavs Suns. I'm probably the only person in the world aside Dallas Mavericks fans who picked the Mavs to win this series. And I, first of all, what did you guys make? What have you guys made of Dallas so far? Like the resurgence they've shown in this series.
Role players play better at home. When you have the home crowd, home cooking, you slept out of your own bed. It's easier to play basketball, especially intense basketball, right? So you have, Luka wasn't as efficient as the best player of the team should, but he, you know, they came up with the win. Others carried him. I know Brunson chipped in here and there.
Yeah, he had a solid game three.
I know there's not much to talk about Spencer this series, especially, but you know, both ways, he can be off and on. But I'll just say the Mavs just, you know, hold serve at home, tied the series 2-2, made it competitive, made it interesting. But I still have the Suns winning in six.
Okay. So, what about you?
I mean, it's always nice to see, like, the underdogs, like, prove you wrong. I had Phoenix winning quite easily, but Dallas, they're proving me wrong. Last night's game, you have Finney Smith making 8 out of 12 threes. Now, that's an anomaly. That's not going to happen in playoff games regularly. But shout out to Brunson, Doncic, they did their thing. And their defense is exactly what I thought it was. They're able to keep Chris Paul to 5 points in 23 minutes. Mikal Bridges to 6 points. DA to 14 points, even though he was efficient, but they're keeping him away from actually taking more shots. So yeah, their defense is amazing and they're making smarter basketball plays. I'm also disappointed in how the Phoenix Suns are playing right now. I don't know, like, I don't know if they're lacking like urgency or maybe after getting like a two game lead, they got complacent, but yeah, they need that edge back. Chris Paul getting fouling out, that's not typical of Chris Paul. But yeah, it's quite an interesting series now. I still have Phoenix Suns in, I'd say in seven now. I thought it was
We're going seven now. Okay. I actually have a lot of things I want to touch on. First of all, Jason Kidd. What a coach he is, man. Like, he has made every single adjustment that the Dallas Mavericks need to get them back into the series. I heard a story, I think it was in the Jazz series, one of the commentators was like, at the start of the season, Jason Kidd pulled Luka aside. He's like, oh, of all the defenders in the NBA, you are ranked 250th. And Luka was like, oh, wow. Obviously, any superstar would be like, I might not play defense, but I'm not that bad. And then 2 months later, you know, the Mavs are starting to pick up. Their defense is starting to heat up. Pulls him aside. He's like, oh, great job, but you're now ranked 150th. And Luka is still like, after everything, is still 150. So started putting more effort into the defensive side of things. And we saw what happened towards the end of the year with the Mavericks. And turns out it was a lie. He made it up. But that's the kind of, that's what you need from your coach, to put that fire in you, to make you, you know, want to burn, to make you want to go out there and give 250% on the floor. And after games one and two, where Luka had scored 80 points, more points than the rest of his team combined, Jason Kidd called out the rest of the team. He was like, who's going to join Luka at the party? And Jalen Brunson showed up big time in game three with 28 points. Game four, Durant Finney-Smith, 24 points. People call him the best role player in the NBA. Not just Finney-Smith, though. Bertans had a big first half, hitting 4 out of 6 threes. Spencer also had a really good first half yesterday, even though the game in general, he was a bit off and on. But big up Jason Kidd, he's made the adjustments. Luka is the definition of unguardable. Like, I know a lot of people in the league are called unguardable, but you can't, have you seen what he's been doing to Mikal Bridges? Punishing him, take him down in the post. Mikal Bridges can't do anything. He's too skinny. You can't body him up. You take DeAndre, put DeAndre Ayton on him. He's going to assault him on the perimeter. Put Chris Paul on him. He's too small. Book has tried, but Book can't stop Luka. Like, he's a one-man destruction weapon. Like, that's what he is. He's such an amazing talent. I hope one day Femi will realize that he is generational and join the boat. But yeah, Luka has been amazing all series. And then third thing is Chris Paul. Now, I know everyone says, oh, Chris Paul is not going to have more fouls and points again, but like in game three he had 7 turnovers in the first half alone. Like, that's Russell Westbrook-esque, and he had 7 of them in the first half, and that was due to Dallas's defense. And game four he had, you know, 4 fouls in the first half and then ended up fouling out in the third quarter. I know people have problems with the 5th fouls, but in general all 6 of them were fouls. Now, whether or not you call that on Chris Paul is different, but all 6 of them were genuinely basketball fouls. And I don't know. I just feel like the series can end up going 2 different ways now. We could see what happened against Milwaukee last year, where Luka just goes on a tear and the Mavs just win 4 straight. Or it could be what happened against the Pelicans, where CP is like, hold on. Like, I'm still, y'all give me the point guard for a reason. And he goes off and has, you know, not another perfect game, but something of that nature. And to be honest with you, I'm scared it might be the latter, because the Mavs fan who put his hands on CP's fam, such a stupid thing. Like, over the past year, I don't know what has come of our fans in the NBA. Had someone pouring popcorn on Russell Westbrook, had another guy spitting at Trae Young, and now someone's putting his hands on CP's mom and wife. Like, you know, CP is not going to come out in game 5 after they did that and let that slide. Like, he's going to come out with fire. Which is why I'm worried for, you know, my Mavs in 7 pick, because he's going to go. Trust me, the Suns might blow the Mavs out in game 5. I hope it doesn't happen, but it might happen. But yeah, what else do you guys make of the series? I still have the Mavs winning in 7, but I'm just a bit worried about my pick.
Like you said, Luka cannot be denied. Like, he's having a terrible game with still 26 points. I know a lot of players have said, like, superstars will always get their points regardless how they get it. But the only difference I see is there is more tendency for Chris Paul to show up more than Finley-Smith or more than Brunson having those type of games they have. So I just think any contribution, like we said, against Boston from Nets, any solid contribution from Chris Paul, because Booker is balling. Booker is playing is doing what he's meant to do. So any solid contribution from Chris Paul, Mikal Bridges doing averaging his regular points, I don't see how Mavs would be able to overcome
that. I mean, it's the playoffs. You make adjustments to you know, derail those normal things that you expect to happen. And so far, in the last two games in Dallas, Jason Kidd has made some really good adjustments to, you know, stop putting Reggie Bullock on Chris Paul. Has really, like, especially in game three, he really struggled with Bullock's length and athleticism because, you know, Bullock is like 6'8 and CP is 6'2 max.
But also, do you put like stuck into playing at home and playing away? Because
I do, but
games in their home, and the role players play better when they're home.
I do, but I watched this Mavs team roll up into Utah, probably the most hostile environment in the NBA, without Luka in game three, and walk away with a dub. So, like, well, it's not.
We know the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, obviously the Jazz are not the same team as the Phoenix, as the Phoenix Suns. But like, when you're considering crowd and everything, like, the crowd really gets into, you know, opposing players, and, you know, they back their players in Utah. And the Suns are somehow like the Jazz in that nature. So I feel like they wouldn't be fazed going away from home. It's all about, you know, playing your own game, getting stops on the defensive end, because that's the only way you're going to win this series. You just have to play defense. You're not going to outscore Phoenix. So you have to go get stops, you know, grab rebounds. Don't let DeAndre Ayton work you out on the boards. And genuinely, it could turn out good for the Mavs.
Yeah, for me, it all comes down to like the role players for the Mavs. If they show up, they would win, because if Luka drops 50, they would still lose if everyone is cold. So they need like their role players. And I just feel like, away, I don't know how the role players, they would have to show me something, basically.
Yeah, they didn't show up in game one and game two. That's no denying. But we'll see what happens tomorrow in game five. Femi, any final thoughts from you on the series?
I'll just say it's fire. Whoever wins game five wins.
So you think if the Mavs win game five, they're going home to Dallas to close the series?
They have to, because if not, they would have to come back and play game seven.
I agree with you on that. If they do win game five, then they have to close out in Dallas, because I don't see them winning.
I don't see them coming back in Phoenix.
Yeah.
I don't see them winning at Phoenix, so that's the one.
That's fair. I can't agree with that. Obviously, the second game, the Sixers versus the Miami Heat. Even after going 2-0 down, boy, I stuck with the Sixers. I said, listen, Joel Embiid steps on the floor, it's a totally different game. So what did you guys make of games one, well, games three and games four?
Joel Embiid is a force. He's a force of nature. He's a freak of nature. Just his presence on the court. Like, I remember game three, he didn't have like the best game, I think 18 points or something.
Yeah.
But that law of attraction, like, even Jimmy would reference that, like, in post game analysis, he would be like, when Joel has the ball, even if he doesn't have the ball, you have to pay attention to where Joel is at. And then you have more cuts, and, you know, you're able to like lose your primary assignment because you're paying attention to Joel. So, Joel is amazing. He's blowing my mind. Like, he's playing. He has a I think ligament issue in his finger.
He's gonna have to get surgery in the offseason for it.
He has orbital problems. He had a concussion. Like, and he's able to put his team on the back from 0-2 down. James Harden had a good game last night as well. Tyrese has been playing amazing. Tobias Harris has showed up. So that team, they're showing resilience, and Doc Rivers has made adjustments as well. DeAndre Jordan hasn't seen any minutes since basically Joel has come back. So I like what I see. Is it sustainable? I don't think so, but it's impressive.
So you still have the Heat winning the series?
The Heat are quite disappointing. I wanted to touch on that as well. They're the number one seed, and their half-court offense is just so filthy.
You know, I said it against Atlanta that I worry about their offense in the half-court, because sometimes it just takes them like 20 seconds to get into their motion. And all of a sudden, there's 4 seconds on the shot clock, and then you have to hoist up a contested shot. Like, yeah, it doesn't work like that.
Jimmy has shown up, but it seems every other person has, like, they just took a vacation. So,
Kyle Lowry. You have to get into Kyle Lowry as well.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't want to, like, get into Kyle Lowry because I've always gone ham on Kyle Lowry. But I just want to cut him some slack because he's...
Didn't he have zero in game three?
Yeah, he's not been good. He's not been positive on the court at
zero,
all.
Though? Zero?
But he's coming back from an injury.
Zero!
It's inexcusable, but you're throwing in the middle of playoffs. Like, yeah, it's tough, but he needs to do better. If they're going to win, he needs to do better. Like, your closing lineup cannot... You cannot have Kyle Lowry on the bench on your closing lineup and Victor Oladipo playing and all these guys. Yeah, Kyle Lowry, you should be on the closing lineup.
Zero is not good enough, bro. Zero is not good enough. Like, I love Kalo, who's the greatest Raptor of all time, but zero is not good enough. Zero is terrible. Femi, what about you? What have you made of zero?
I guess we've seen, to be honest, it's the same as the Mavs series. I was going to win game five. Has to close it out in game six. Why? Because the Heat are, I'll say Philly, this is Philly's one chance to go far and go really deep in the playoffs. They haven't made the conference finals since AI, right? So there's that pressure. And you could see how alleviating it was for Harden to get back into that form he was. Like he was dancing with the rock, patting left, right, behind the back, step back, tray ball, you know?
That's so a step, like, back, Papi, we know.
You know what I'm saying? So, that's a step back, Papi, you know what I'm saying? Like he was nice with it yesterday with a very an admirable efficiency, 8 of 18, 13.1 points. So that's good. You have Maxi contributing. You have Danny Green contributing. And all you need is just a good Danny Green on the road. Like, just a good Danny Green, not even a very good. Right? Because that way, you just seal the deal. Like you always hear from Kenny Smith himself. You hear him say that, the playoffs doesn't start until the road team, wins on the road. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep.
That's gonna be it's gonna be very obvious in this series. So I would like to just see it.
Danny Green, he's the biggest. What's the word? I forgot the English word for it, but he confuses me. He genuinely confuses me because that man can go 0 of 6 today and 6 of 9 from 3 tomorrow. Like, that's just the kind of player he is. I don't understand him. But he's really stepped up in games 3 and games 4. Tyrese Maxey in game 3 was something special, especially from the third. He had 0 in the first half, finished with 21. From the third quarter, he just took over. And then that play where he saved the pass to Oladipo, Harden, resets it, gives it to Joel the end one to basically close the game. Like, that was special from Tyrese Maxey. But Joel Embiid is something... He's something else. Like you said, Tosin, in game 3, he didn't have the best game offensively. Like, he wasn't putting up, jumpers that were automatic for him just weren't going down. But his mere presence on the floor just changed a lot of things for Philly. The attention he gets is ridiculous. Sorry. The attention he gets is something else. And Miami does do a good job of denying him the ball on the post. Like, whenever he switches onto a PJ Tucker or whenever Bam is covering him or even the Kyle Lowry, they do a great job of ball denial. But at the end of the day, you still have to account for the fact that Joel Embiid is there. And that just opens up a lot of things for Philly's offense. All of a sudden, Danny Green has an extra second before he pulls up. Tobias Harris doesn't have to resort to contested jumpers. James Harden can do what he does because Joel Embiid is there. Tyrese Maxey as well. Jordis Nyang needs to step up. Korkmaz as well. But I picked Philly to win the series in 7. I might be switching to 6 because here's something I never thought I'd say. Doc Rivers has coached circles around Spo in the last 2 games. He's made crazy adjustments going into the zone, then bringing back Joel. I've I respect what I've seen from Doc Rivers and Tobias Harris, two of the people who have called out consecutively on the podcast over the past year. So I'm really excited to see what game five brings, but I have the Sixers winning in six games. And on last night's performance from James Harden, that was a trip back to 2018. That was a trip back to 2019. Little trip back to 2020. That was vintage James Harden. That was Houston Harden. That was the Harden that the Lakers had to trap at half court because you don't want him getting one-on-one against your defense. He was confident. He was stepping back with confidence. He was blown by his primary defenders. He was getting, you know, he was getting foul shots. He was, you know, finishing at the rim. He was just aggressive yesterday, even though that's his second 30-point game since joining Philly, which is definitely not good enough. I hope and all Philly faithful will hope that it's a sign of things to come from him because it was very encouraging to see. Having said all that, Philly in six.
Like I told you guys in the group chat, Corey Brewer scored like 50-something points one game. We have a bunch of role players that have scored 50. Mo Williams scored 51 game. So I'm not... While it was impressive, seeing James Harden like beat James Harden, I am not too optimistic about seeing that constantly. Like
But he doesn't have to be that Houston Harden for them to win the series, though. I don't think he does.
He doesn't, but it changes the defensive scheme for Miami when James Harden is making his shots. Because now they have to have their eyes on not just Joel now.
I don't think it's a problem of him not making his shots. I think it's a problem is of him not just taking shots.
No.
Like James Harden has never, he's never put up 20 shots. I don't think he's put up 20 shots since he moved to Philly in a game.
But that's because he can't be his primary defender most of the time. So he doesn't have the space to actually take.
He did in game two and game three. In game three and game four, sorry.
He beat his primary defender and didn't take 20 shots. Because when you look at second half, like first half, he has the energy. But when you look at second half, he gets maybe a little passive, maybe due to him being tired. I don't know what it is, but he, like before the last game, he had scored a total of 4 points in the fourth quarter.
One of seven from the field.
So I don't know what it is, but he's not taking as many shots. And I see him being stagnant in like most fourth quarters. Like even the last game, the shots just happened to fall. They're no good shots. They're
what?
Like,
but James Harden has never been known for taking good shots though.
And that's why it's easier to for his game to decline, because when the shots are not falling, then it's just not good.
So you still have the Heat winning the series?
I have them winning in
if it goes to a game seven, I don't even trust the Heat to close it on home court. I can't lie to you.
They're just so disappointed the way they're not able to do anything.
Plus, they have they have the worst home court advantage in the NBA.
Yeah,
their fans don't show up until halftime.
Yeah,
they don't really get into the game. Like it's not like when you're in Philly, you know you're in Philly.
Like if Tyler Hero is not like on, it's just Jimmy and that's it.
And then I worry about the non-Jimmy minutes for... Jimmy has had a great playoffs, by the way. He's been amazing. Even the last two games that he lost, I think he had 31 in games three and then 40 last night.
Yeah.
So they're not losing because of Jimmy. You know, he's doing his thing. It's just for other people to show up. Bam, Adebayo, you need to show up, bro. You were cooking.
Really do much. He's playing against Joel. Like,
yeah, but he was cooking when it was DeAndre Jordan. At least you should give me your season average.
This is Bam.
At least he should give me his season average. I expect 19 and 10 from Bam every night.
It's fair. That's fair. I think they need to like tweak their lineups. I don't know about having like Tyler Hero and Victor Oladipo at the same time on the court, because this is a ball dominant players. They need to like pound the rock. Like they're not catch and shoot type.
Jimmy Spo said all year long, even though Vic had been injured, they had worked on running lineups in practice with Tyler Hero, Jimmy Butler, and Victor Oladipo, so that, you know, come playoff time, it won't be something strange to them.
Right, Right. Well, what about the minutes for Vincent and Struess? Like, the minutes have been cut.
We want to talk about cut minutes, Duncan Robinson. I think he's played the minutes in this series.
Yeah, nah. That's because defensively he's not there. But at this point,
They need shooters. They were 5 of 30 from 3 yesterday, or 6 of 30, something of that nature. They resorted to Victor Oladipo in game 4 against Atlanta. They might have to go back to Duncan Robinson. Like, you're paying him $90 million. Make use of him.
Like, I feel when they have Niang on the court, they should have Duncan Robinson guard Niang, because Niang is just a catch and shoot guy. Like,
And his threes haven't been falling. He hasn't done anything.
Taking advantage of Duncan Robinson when Niang is on the floor. So they should play Robinson at the same time Niang is playing.
Femi, any closing thoughts on the series? I guess not. Yeah, guys. So Femi had to leave the recording because he's feeling quite ill right now. But we'll carry on, Tosin and I. That's all for the Miami Heat. And you're still saying Miami in seven. I say Philly in six.
Yeah. I'm going to say I'm on the fence because it's, Miami in seven.
You can't be on defense, brother.
I know. I'm not even the type of person to be on defense, but Miami are so, like, do you remember, like, throughout the season, I've always said, even though they're
You never trusted them. Okay, so let's get into, the other games. What's the other one? The Golden State Warriors against the Memphis Grizzlies. There's a lot of talking points.
That's probably the most controversial, like,
series. There's a lot of talking points from this series. To start with, did Dylan Brooks deserve to be suspended for game 3?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And if you want to show consistency in, like, suspending the player, then Jordan Poole should be suspended too.
You're moving like Skip, bro. Any foul Skip sees right now is throw him out the game, suspend him.
You have to understand, right? It's a flagrant 2, right? Mm-hmm. Borderline flagrant 2.
Borderline? Now, I think it's a clear flagrant 2.
Okay, I mean, we can argue that all day, but, like, let's say it's a flagrant 2. When have you ever seen a flagrant 2 then you get suspended if it's not, like, on the kicking the person below the belt or something?
Grayson Allen did get suspended for a similar type of foul.
The Caruso one. But I don't even like that idea, because a flagrant 2, what's the definition of flagrant 2? It's a non-basketball player that is excessive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously that fits the criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Except you're saying all flagrant 2s should be suspendable.
I think, to be honest with you, I think the main reason he got suspended was just because Gary Payton, like, hurt his elbow.
Makes no sense.
He did take the no layup rule to the extreme. Like, that was a hard foul, Tosin. That was a really
That was a dirty play.
Like, you can't hack someone on his head mid-air and expect that he can land normally.
1,000%.
Like, Dylan Brooks is responsible. Like, he's not a dirty player, but that was a dirty play. And he's responsible for Gary Payton potentially missing the rest of the playoffs with a fractured elbow.
Yeah. But you can say the same for Zaza. He wasn't suspended for
one game. Yeah, but Zaza is a dirty player. Everybody knows Zaza is a dirty player.
Yeah, that's why there's more reason to suspend him when you make a dirty play that ended someone's season.
I mean, I understand that, but, like, landing in someone's putting your foot in someone's landing space is not a flagrant 2. It doesn't qualify under the rules as a flagrant 2. It's a shooting foul, but it's not. It's dangerous. Like, it's extremely dangerous, but it's not classified as a flagrant 2 under NBA fouls.
Yeah, but that is not because it was a flagrant 2 that he was suspended. It was suspended, like you said, because he's going to miss.
No, but if it was a flagrant 1, he definitely wouldn't be suspended. I don't think he would be suspended if he was tagged as a flagrant 1.
I guess. But what would you say about Draymond's hitting the person on the face and then dragging the guy down and whatnot?
Is it the ones in game 1?
Yeah. The only difference is
that Brandon Clark?
Yeah. The only difference is that guy.
To be fair, which is why I agree with you that he shouldn't have been suspended. It's a clear fragrant too. He deserved to be tossed out of the game. Took the layup, no layup route to the next level. But you're going to have to suspend Draymond if you're suspending this guy, Dylan Brooks.
Yeah.
You're going to have, and then.
And the Jordan Poole one, now that one is not a dirty.
It's not dirty. Neither is it intentional.
That's more accidental, but that's my basketball play.
I understand. But then you have Desmond Bane running into, like, it's just a weird series. Like, a lot of weird things are happening. And unfortunately for what Jordan Poole did, Ja will miss game four. I think he will miss game four. Yeah. Well, he might try to play through the pain, but it's likely that he misses game four. So is that series over for you?
To be consistent and suspend Jordan Poole until Ja comes back, because it makes no sense.
Is that series over for you?
So Memphis Grizzlies, they've shown that they can play without Ja.
Mm-hmm.
Without Ja, they move the ball a little bit more.
Better defensively as well.
Better defensively. So I would love to watch today's game before I basically stand somewhere. I still have Warriors winning that series, but it would be interesting to see what happens today, because defensively, I think that's the most important part for me. And also, when they're moving the ball on offense, then people are not as cold, because it's basically just Ja getting all the points and everybody's like cold. So if everybody gets hot, then Golden State, they have to make more decisions defensively and it might just be more difficult.
I honestly think Golden State just has too much for Memphis, like with or without Ja. Great performance in game two, putting up 47. You know, that's one for the books. But they just have too much talent, experience.
You have to stop three players. Like, you can stop one, but you probably can't stop.
And Clay didn't show up for game one and game two. Game three, he was ready. He came ready. Yeah. Jordan Poole telling the crowd, I'm him. You're damn right, you are him.
Jordan Poole is probably the second most unguardable player on that team. Like, he's shifty.
Yeah, like, his handles. Like, it's almost like you can't tell me he doesn't work day and night on his handles, because, like, he knows what he needs to do to create space. And like I always say with Kyrie Irving, your ability to create space combined with your ability to make tough shots is what makes you extremely unguardable. And Jordan Poole is getting to that stage where he knows how to create space from anybody that's guarding him. Plus, if he manages to do a good defensive job, he can still make that tough shot over you. Yeah. And that's a really, really good sign for the Warriors. Terrible sign for the rest of the league, of course. I think the series is over. Memphis don't have a shot of winning without Ja. I know they went 20-3 without Ja this season, but this is a different animal. This is a different beast. This is, to an extent, a wounded animal. This is a team that went to the NBA Finals 5 years in a row and didn't make the playoffs for 2 years straight. They are hungry. They are dying. Like, they're trying to show everyone, listen, I know you're going to say, oh, Kyrie and Caleb were injured in 2015, and then we had KD in 2017 and 2018, but this nucleus owes, like, the NBA championship. And you can see it by the way they play, by the way they talk, by the way Steph goes about his game, that he believes that the Warriors are the best team in the league and they're coming back with the championship this season. And I think that, coupled with the experience they have going to five straight NBA finals, they have a good mix of vets and young players with, like, the likes of Draymond, Steph, Klay, even though he hasn't been on the big stage, Otto Potter. And then you have the younger guys like Damian Lee, Toscano Anderson, Jordan Poole, am I forgetting anyone? Andrew Wiggins, you know, they haven't really done it before. So and then you have a really good coach in Steve Kerr. You don't win 73 games if you don't have a good coach. So I'm just like, I look at all those things and I can't see anything that favors the Grizzlies in this series. I might be worse in five if Kerr is not taken. I think Ja will come back and give Memphis a win in game five just to show the world what it's about, but Warriors in six, to be honest with you.
But if Memphis should, like, scrap a win today, what would that mean for you?
Then that changes a lot. Well, it doesn't really change a lot. The Warriors can still rock up into Memphis and win and then close out the series back in Chase Center. Mm-hmm. Like, if they win today, that's credit to them, but I just don't see them winning the series.
Yeah, I think if they win today, that shows me a lot. Like, it
shows heart, it shows desire, it shows resilience. But you need more than that. You do need talent to win playoff series. And I just think the Warriors are top, like, their top wrestler is like just too talented for the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies do need another person that can go get a bucket. I thought Dylan Brooks would be that guy, but
Dylan Brooks is that guy, but you know, he hasn't really played in this series, like for the most part.
Right. Yeah, but I think I have Warriors winning in six games.
Yeah, I have them winning in six as well, but if this guy should win today, yeah, I have them winning seven.
Okay. And another crazy series. Like this has been such an amazing playoffs. Like it's almost like we've been treated to good games every single night. And then another game that's going to kick off in a bit, Milwaukee versus Boston. You know, this has been a topsy-turvy series. And game one, Giannis was dominant, throwing the ball off the backboard to himself and then finishing. Milwaukee blows them out. Game two, Boston, Jaylen Brown goes up for 25 in the second quarter, in the first half, sorry. And finishes with 30. Jason Tatum finishes with 29. What's his name? Grant Williams finishes with 21. I think he makes seven threes or something of that nature. Or six threes. And then you look at game three. Game three was very close. And the Celtics didn't play good enough to win that game, but they could have easily nicked it as well. I think the game that turned the play that turned the whole game on its head was the stupid decision by Jaylen Brown to try and go up and finish over Giannis with 40 something seconds left on the clock. That was unnecessary. That wasn't like, I know you're in transition, you have the lane, but it's Giannis that's there. It's Giannis. Like, you can't finish easily over Giannis. If it's Brook Lopez, it's fine. You can beat yourself into getting a foul or something. But this is Giannis we're talking about. Like, you're not going to finish over Giannis in the clutch. Just kick it out, reset, and get your offense loaded. I don't particularly like the decision to miss by Marcus Smart the free throw, because if you get the game down to one, inbound, if they probably inbound the ball to Giannis or Drew Holiday, you know, you can't. And they had another timeout. So if they did foul, they could have, if let's say the person makes, you know, both free throws, had a timeout, 3 seconds left. That's enough time for you to, you know, dribble, take a shot, take a 3-point shot to tie the game. They miss one, you can get in the lane and tie the game or something. I don't particularly like that decision. But big up the Boston Celtics. They've made great adjustments from game one that has made the series a lot closer. Grant Williams is what have you made of the series so far?
First off, Grant Williams isn't playing today. I'm sorry, not Grant Williams. Robert Williams,
yeah.
And for me, that changes a lot because they have to play a little bit smaller now. And
they did win game two without Marcus Smart, though.
Yeah, but they play bigger, right? Marcus Smart is like one of their smallest players.
Isn't he like 6'4 and 6'5?
Yeah, but he's still like one of their smallest players. The only guy smaller than him is probably Pritchard. But
Pritchard is smaller than me.
Robert Williams isn't playing today. I don't know who's gonna start at the center. Maybe
it'll probably be Theis or Al Horford has done a great job this series as well.
Yeah,
sorry to cut you short. Carry on.
He didn't love like timely shots. But I also didn't like that free throw setup because obviously, Milwaukee had all their seven-footers there. And
he did grab the rebound.
He did. But I feel like he should have made the shot. And Milwaukee, I'm not sure if they had a timeout at the time. But if they didn't have a timeout, they couldn't sub any of those guys out. So it was just a bunch of, like, centers and probably less people that can make free throws. You follow them, take your chance, and then go make your basket.
I think with the free throw, they were down two. So I don't know, even if you, like, grab the rebound, I get the urgency to go up and shoot it immediately, but there was still time. You could call the timeout or something. Like I don't know. Like there was, yeah. I feel like there was a lot of things that could have been done in that situation rather than forcing up that tough shot that Marcus Smart eventually did. But right. Yeah, carry on.
But Giannis has shown his dominance. He has shown that he can't possibly have back-to-back terrible games. He has shown that over the years, he would always find a way. He's mentally tough, as mentally tough as they come. Tatum has been up and down. And I don't know, that's like a trend with like jump shooters. Like when you have people playing tough defense on you, jump shooters always tend to have like the most difficult times.
In that game four, he couldn't get anything going. Like, I saw him drive to the rim and, you know, yeah, it was contested, but these are layups still makes 9 times out of 10, and it just rimmed out for him. So you just know, like, on days like this, it's really not my day. But then up Jaylen Brown and Al Horford stepping up in the fourth and then putting the Celtics on their back and tying the game, even with the lead at some point. Big bucket from Giannis, big bucket from Holiday as well.
I did find it interesting that even though Tatum had like a terrible game with 10 points, it was still a 2-point game. So I'm not sure what to make of that. Like, if Tatum has like a good game, does he make Boston declare favorite? Or does it mean that Jaylen Brown would not have as good of a game as he did? I'm not sure, like, the balance, if both of them can go off at the same time against Milwaukee. But,
I mean, Tatum had 29 in game three. Brown had 30.
Yeah, so maybe it is possible.
Game two.
Well, how would you say, like, the adjustments Milwaukee made from game two to game three? How do you think it affected the game?
I don't think it affected the game that much. I just think Boston were never going to make 23s again. Mm-hmm. Like, Grant Williams went 6 of 9 from 3 in game 2. Was 0 of 5 or 1 of 5 in game 3. Like, that's the difference, especially away from home. Role players, even though he's, like, becoming more than a role player, he's starting to come into his own in this Celtics team. I just didn't expect him to go off for 21 again like he did. JJ Redick called it borrowed points, and that's true. Like, Grant Williams won't continuously give you 21 points a game. But then Al Horford, like, I think we need to talk about him more. Not only has he, like, come up with timely buckets for the Celtics, he put the Celtics on his quarter, especially towards the end of that third quarter and beginning of the fourth quarter. He's making jump shot after jump shot, making the right play, rather than settling for a jump shot, driving to the rim and finishing. And aside that, the defense him and Grant Williams have played on Giannis has been outstanding. Yeah. Outstanding. There were a couple calls in game three that should have gone against Giannis as offensive fouls, because let's be honest, he's lowering the shoulder and he's charging at this guy sometimes. But it doesn't matter. They still put you know what it is to put your body on the line against Giannis? I respect any man that can step in front of Giannis and take a charge from him. Any man, I respect you.
So I
can't say enough about what Horford has done for the Celtics. This, not just this series, this whole year, but particularly in the playoffs. I think it's a pretty interesting game this night, especially without Robin Williams. You do lose a bit of that rim protection. So, I don't know. Yeah. It's a very tricky.
I want to, like, credit Boston as well. They play defense without fouling. Like, Milwaukee shot just 17 free throws, and Boston shot 34. That's times two. And that's how they were able to keep themselves within
the game
reach. But yeah, that's credit to their defense. They play incredible defense. But Jrue Holiday came up decent as well. He didn't shoot well, but he played with grit.
Made some big threes. Made some really big threes.
Yeah. He scored 25. Grayson Allen scored 0. I don't know how many games that would happen. So I don't know if that's an anomaly.
But I honestly feel like the Celtics have done a good job of, like, negating Grayson Allen's threats.
Right. That's fair. Bobby Portis has not been a factor in this series so far. Hoping that changes, because when Bobby is hitting his shots, then you can't just sag off Bobby and defend Giannis the way they would plug up the paint.
No, you know, I think the thing is, right, they stay home on corner shooters and they still manage to make Giannis work for his shots. Like, not a lot of teams in the NBA can do that. But when you have, like, I saw Giannis post Grant Williams and the man didn't move. He backed into him and he literally did not move.
Yeah.
It's not every day you see that. Now, that man is a standing block. And so with the fact that they're able to stay home on corner shooters and this thing and still play good enough defense on Giannis to be able to make him have inefficient nights here and there, I'm crediting the Celtics defense more than putting it down to parties not showing up or something of that nature.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm saying all that to say I still have Milwaukee. I had them in, I think, 6 the last time we talked, but I think I'm going to go Milwaukee in 7 now, because Boston, they show me that they really mean business. They play defense.
It's a key game tonight. And then Ime Udoka as well. He's like the heart and soul of the team. It's like the team goes out there and fights for Ime. He's the personality of the team itself. Yeah. We're gonna go out there, we're gonna play defense, we're not rolling over for anybody. They said it, we don't duck. They didn't say we don't duck the smoke, but Ime literally said, we're not running from anyone. Everyone was trying to, duck the Brooklyn Nets or something, took them, swept them. They're not running from Giannis, they're gonna take the challenge. And I respect that 1000%. Tonight is a very key night because the winner of this game four, not necessarily wins this series, but if Milwaukee wins this night, they're winning the series because I don't see Giannis losing in a situation where all he has to do is grab one. I don't think that's possible. Yeah. So I think the Celtics will know how urgently they need to win this night and will come out and play like here. Jason Tatum will also have to make up for his poor shooting nights the other day. Superstars in the playoffs do not have back-to-back games, and I don't expect him to have 10 points again today. So I think I'm picking the Celtics to win today's game and to win in 7 games.
Yeah, for today, I'll go Milwaukee. I feel like winning the last game, they found something. They're confident right now, and I think they have the momentum.
So you trust Boston to take it to 7, even being 3-1 down?
No. Okay, I'm contradicting myself right now. But when you said if Milwaukee wins today, they're winning the series. If they win today, I would have them winning in 6.
Okay.
I want them to win today, but it's very unrealistic, basically.
I think they have a really good shot of winning today. But as Jason Tatum mentioned it one time, or was it JJ Redick, that the team that wins, like the team that loses in a playoff series, obviously you lose a game, but you're almost like at an advantage for the next game because you know what you did wrong. You know what adjustments to make. You know where to get better in the next game. Now, I know obviously Milwaukee are not just going to sleep and be like, oh, we play how we played last time, because they know Jason Tatum is not going for 10 points again. But I just feel like the Celtics, they've worked so hard for the season to just end here, and they're hungry for more, which is why I have them winning tonight.
That's fair. It's going to be a good game for sure.
Very good game. There's also news. NBA, after taking the piss for almost 5 years, have finally announced the MVP. Not who I wanted, but I don't know how to feel about it. What's your thoughts on Jokic winning the MVP?
I always said that for me, it's between Jokic and Embiid and even Giannis. And I would have been fine with either of them winning the award. Mm-hmm. So it could have gone to either one. I would have been fine with it. But Jokic deserves it as much as every other person on the contender list. Jokic played amazing with the squad he had. He led the league in PER in every advanced category you can think of. He was first or second. He was right there in everything. And although this is the story of the NBA, there's always inconsistencies. I saw where LeBron led in all categories except one, 3-point percentage. He and James Harden tied.
Of 2018, definitely LeBron should have won it in 2018.
They gave James Harden because LeBron's team was fourth, and now they give Jokic even though his team was sixth. So there is inconsistencies there, but yeah, you can't deny Jokic deserves.
But I don't think Bron led the league in scoring in 2018, though.
He didn't lead the league, but he had more points per game than James Harden.
Okay, for me, I think Joel Embiid deserves it. I genuinely thought. Not that Jokic is not a worthy winner. He definitely is. But I just feel like going into this season, Jokic knew he wasn't going to have Jamal Murray. It wasn't up to halfway through the season. He lost Michael Porter Jr. So, obviously, it's tough. It's tough. But, he got along with it. But he didn't have to put up with the nonsense. today Ben Simmons doesn't literally day to day Ben Simmons doesn't know if Ben Joel Embiid doesn't know if he's going to get Ben Simmons back. Mm-hmm. And it was just him and the rest of the guys, and he put that team on his back in the tougher conference, got them as to a top four seed, could have been top two if he didn't miss 10-15 games due to injury, led the league in scoring, most 40-point, 10-rebound games in a season, first center to lead the league in scoring since Shaq. He was dominant. Like, I watched every single game I watched this year, bar one or two games, did I think, oh, Joel Embiid is not the best player in the world. I'll take it a step further. I think, after Giannis, Joel is the second best player in the world.
Before you finish your point, Michael Porter only played 9 games, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. It wasn't up to halfway into the season that he lost him. So he knew for a long while that he wasn't going to have Michael Porter Jr. for the rest of the season. And it's credit to him that he was able to get his team to all those wins, which is why, like I said, he's a worthy winner. I just feel like Joel deserved it more. And then you consider the fact that Joel plays defense as well. Like I said, every single year when Joel is on the floor, the Sixers are a top 5 defense. This year, they had the fourth best defense with Joel on the floor. It's a two-way sport, I think.
Like, I have a pushback. So when you say Jokic knew that these guys weren't playing. Also, on the flip side, Jokic was losing 2 starters.
I know. It doesn't make it any easier knowing that they're not there. But
and also, you have to realize that, what's his name? Tyrese Maxey averaged way more points than Ben would have.
There was no drama surrounding MPG and Jamal Murray. They were just
100%.
There was no noise. There was nothing.
But in terms of supporting cast, Joel had more.
I wouldn't necessarily say more. I'm saying the eye test, like analytics favors Nikola Jokic, no doubt. But the eye test, like I watch NBA games, Tosin, on only 2 or 3 occasions was I like, okay, this guy is definitely better than Joel. That's why they're not winning. 2 or 3 occasions, maximum, through the whole regular season.
No, I understand that. But I'm talking about most valuable for their team, right?
We just saw what happened to the Sixers in the playoffs against the number one seed without Joel.
No, I understand. But who would you say was the second best player on Philly?
It was definitely Tyrese Maxey.
Okay, before the trade, there was this guy,
Seth Curry.
There's Tobias Harris. Now let's go to Denver. Who would you say is comparable?
Monte Morris. Stop. Monte Morris is a baller.
What is he averaging?
Monte Morris is a baller. I don't know what he's averaging, but I know Monte.
Like when you watch him play, of course, like he's a baller. But like, what is he actually producing on the court? That's my question. He averaged 12 points per game.
He's good.
What do you mean that's good?
They have Aaron Gordon as well.
What did Aaron Gordon
is no scrub.
15. Uh-huh.
That's multiple double figure players. They have Will Barton as well. That's a bowler. Bones Highland, one a very good rookie.
Still okay. Let's look at
Jeff Green. Jeff Green, like these are valuable pieces.
Okay, let's look at the Philly players. Tyrese Maxey, 17 points per game. James Harden, 21 points per game.
James Harden came through three quarter.
Yeah. Tobias Harris, 17 points per game. Then we look at the guys they had before.
Wait, after Tobias Harris in the current Philly team, what's the next scoring average?
So Maxey's ahead of Tobias.
Maxey, Tobias, then who?
Maxey, Tobias, Seth Curry averaged.
I'm talking about on the current roster.
No, we're talking about before the trade, right?
Oh, before the trade. Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So Seth Curry averaged for the season 15 points per game.
Uh-huh.
And that's the second best on Denver.
Yeah, but they have multiple double figure scorers though.
Same as Philly. We just mentioned 3 other people.
Aaron Gordon, Monte Morris.
Drummond also averaged 12 points per game.
Drummond's stats were inflated when he was in Brooklyn. I don't think he was averaging up to 12 points when he was in Philly.
Okay, granted, but those are three extra people, and the worst among those people is the highest on Denver.
But Joel Embiid also plays defense. Like he every year he's in the card, he's in the discussion for defensive player.
I give you that. Joel as a rim protector, he's better.
Not
than...
just a rim protector, like he can buy his own on against perimeter players. Obviously, nah, I'm not saying put him on an island against Steph.
He's just strictly rim protector.
Did you see the way he locked up Victor Oladipo yesterday?
Yeah, we're talking about Victor Oladipo. He couldn't get by you.
Not this again.
I
genuinely feel like Joel Embiid deserved MVP. I'm not going to say he was robbed.
He deserved it as well. That's not my argument.
I feel like he was more deserving than Jokic. Jokic is a worthy winner, but I just have to give it to Joe. On a game-by-game basis, Joe was the best player in the world this series. And for me, he's the second best player in the world, even before Kevin Durant. I'm dead serious.
What happened when we faced them? Where we packed our bags and we went to Philly?
Oh, what happened when he faced you on his own?
Free throws.
Didn't he wave you goodnight?
Free throws.
Did he wave you goodbye?
Also, because we were playing with James Harden.
Did he wave you goodbye? Okay, so he lost by 20 because he was playing with James Harden.
All right, touche. But all I'll say is, Joel deserves it as well, but Jokic deserves it.
Jokic is a word. I don't know, man. I don't know. I just
Jokic has too many stats.
I'm not. Like I said, Jokic is a worthy winner.
Your basic arguments too, which are like very good. Don't get me wrong. You are talking defensive side, and even if you look at over the years when James Harden was winning, for MVP, nobody really focuses too much on the defensive side. Think about it. Is how crazy your offensive stats are. That's Westbrook was MVP.
No, Westbrook had a historic season. That's why he won MVP.
Okay, but what about James Harden?
Back even 2018, I said LeBron should have won MVP, and I think LeBron should have had one of Giannis's MVPs as well. The second one.
Sure, but the point is the focus is not heavily on defense.
Yeah, but you have to pay attention. Like, basketball is a two-way sport. This is not like NFL.
But you would always know the best player on the court versus MVP. You get what I'm saying?
That's so true. MVP is not necessarily the best player in the world, but like it's a title that everyone in the NBA dreams of having. And over the past 2 years, Joel, in my opinion, on a game-by-game basis, has been the best player in the world.
I mean, that's immaculate cap, but we'll let you have it.
On the game, back, of course, last season, if he played more games, you know Jokic didn't stand a chance in the MVP race.
No, not Jokic is contemporary in that. Giannis and KD.
Well, leave KD away from this, please. Remove KD away from this, please. Excuse KD from this conversation. KD, you may be excused. Please open the door and leave. Thank you.
We have short-term memory. We're talking about regular season here.
I'll put KD in the conversation when he starts creaming his legs. The second award for the day that was mentioned
season
was the coach of the year.
What disrespect, KD. My guy was dropping 30 every
other. KD saw small physical defense. I'm like, well, mommy, they're being physical. That's
playoff. This is the regular season award.
So KD only shows up at the regular season. Is that what you're trying to say?
I don't want to enter the argument. That's why I'm talking about regular season. We know what KD has done in the playoffs.
He done in the playoffs without Golden State Warriors dynasty?
Let's move on.
Money Williams wrapped up coach of the year today. Very deserving. I thought he deserved it the most, and I fear that because of no one saw Memphis coming, Taylor Jenkins was gonna win it. But big up Money, he deserves it. You don't win 65 games and not win coach of the year. Like, that is ridiculous. From where he's coming from as well, with that team, with that New Orleans team, with what's his name, Chris Paul, and then to link up how many years down the line and win is just amazing. Like, I'm really proud of Money. I can't remember the team he was on before the Suns, but he definitely deserves his dues. I'm happy for him. And yeah, well-deserved coach of the year. What do you think?
I think it's either they have like best coach of the year and most improved coach. Because if they don't have most improved coach, I don't know why. Like, because you know voters fatigue, right? I'm at that point with Monty Williams.
But Monty has never won coach of the year.
Okay, so here's my thought process. I'm like, expectations for me gets like me to be more impressed. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So if I expect 50 games from you and you get 51 games, I wouldn't give you coach of the year.
Did you expect Phoenix to win over 60 games coming into this season?
I expected them to be the number one seed.
You did, even when the Warriors were balling out.
Yeah, I told you Warriors were going to finish in the bottom half of the
okay. But here's the thing with money, though. Like, last year, nobody saw Phoenix coming the way they came as well.
Yeah, last year, I feel like he deserved it last year.
And then they gave it to Thibs, and don't let me speak on that. Because if I do...
That's complete bullshit, because if you're going to carry that logic into this year, then you don't give it to Monty, because Thibs wasn't, like, number one in the conference. Yeah. It was a storyline.
Once again, it's just confused. Like, nobody understands what you need to do to win these awards, but it is what it is. But yeah, we're the biggest winner and loser of the week before we close up.
Biggest winner for me is probably James Harden.
Mm.
Because he needs to ramp up like a good amount of games to secure his contract, his long-term contract.
That could have been a legacy saving fourth quarter from James Harden. I can't lie to you.
Yeah, so that's the biggest winner for me. The biggest loser for me is the franchise of Miami.
Tosin has, you know, he has contracts pending.
with the fact that they finished number one with the best record in the East, with a hampered Joel Embiid not being able to win a single game against a hampered Joel Embiid. Very disappointing. So they're my biggest losers.
Biggest winner, definitely James Harden for me. That fourth quarter was not an out-of-body experience, but it was just like Harden stands. Trust me, Neto was almost crying yesterday when he was watching that fourth quarter. He was like, y'all don't know how much this means, right? And then biggest loser of the week for me is the Memphis Grizzlies. Dylan Brooks' suspension, Jaw's injury, Brandon Clark, young, ignorant self going on the podcast and saying, oh, he took it a bit too far. Like, you don't say those things outside. You probably tell him in the locker room, like, hey, bro, what are you doing? That was dangerous. But, like, you don't talk like that outside. That's your teammate. You should have his bark.
That's like some bits.
He should have his bark. Jesus Christ. He should have his bark regardless. But yeah, that's my biggest winner and biggest loser for the week. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Courtcast. Thank you for returning, T Shy T. What did you say I should call you again? Mystique or whatever. Whatever you said.
No, I didn't say you should call me that. I just said it was, I don't even remember what I said, but
yeah, you see, he don't even remember his takes.
No. That's because I don't remember like what I was talking.
Thank you for coming back, T-Shy-T. Also, thank you for stealing Joe Burrow's nickname.
Joe Burrow stole it once again.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Courtcast. As usual, I've been your voice of reason. Make sure to check us out on all podcast streaming platforms. Give us a follow on Instagram, Twitter. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. So listen to the Courtcast. Adios from Femi. We'll see you in the next episode. Goodbye.
It's a Slam Time production.